The first question was, what practice is it good to do while you're alive? I would say, I think two that come to mind. First one is to keep good ethical conduct. So whether or not you've taken the five precepts to abandon killing, taking what hasn't been freely given to us, lying, even the little white lies that you do out of compassion, so other people won't know the things that you did that you don't want them to know. That's why we have those little white lies. And not, keeping good sexual ethics, not being. If you're married, if you're in a relationship, being faithful, not going around to other people, and then also avoiding intoxicants. And now you go, oh, okay, the first one, not killing, that's okay, except for my termites and my cockroaches. Okay. Not stealing, that's true. I won't break into anybody's house in the middle of the night. But I will overcharge my employer because he doesn't pay me enough anyway. I'll be faithful to my spouse, except when I don't want to. I won't lie unless I have something to cover up. I won't take intoxicants. Okay, I won't take coffee. No, I will take coffee. I won't take tequila. Tequila's too strong. But everything else, that's okay. Right? Is that how you keep the precepts? Where we have all sorts of ifs, ands, and buts. I don't gossip, except I gotta tell you these things I heard about sometimes. And I don't talk badly about people behind their back. Did you hear about what so-and-so did? Oh my God. Why do you still hang out with him? It's amazing, isn't it? I don't utter harsh words, except when I do it out of compassion because somebody was a jerk. I have to let them know for their own good that they're a jerk, right? Okay, so keeping good ethical conduct. And the second one is to, meditate on the kindness of others. Remember the kindness of others and use that to generate compassion towards them. Okay? So the kindness of others is fairly easy when it refers to the people we like and the people we love. But what about the kindness of strangers? Oh, who are, why do I have, strangers haven't been kind to me? But they have. Okay, we're sitting in this building. Does anybody here know the people who designed the building, who constructed the building in the hot sun, who put in the electricity? The plumbing, everything else. Do we know any of those people or were they all strangers? They were strangers, But without their effort, then we wouldn't be able to meet here. We might be meeting in a tent somewhere, like in Gaza. What about the roads that we drove on to get here? Do we know the people who made those again in the hot sun? I doubt it. But without their efforts, we wouldn't have been able to get here to start with. Yeah, we're going to have lunch if you can keep me from talking too long. But who made the lunch and who grew the vegetables? In what country were the vegetables and fruits grown? Do we know who planted them, who harvested them, the people who transported them, the people who cooked them? These people also were strangers. But without their efforts, we wouldn't have lunch. When you think about it, I think strangers, the number of strangers that have been kind to us is even greater than the number of people that we know who have been kind. Yeah. And so to really think about this, and so that you feel in your heart like, wow, I've received a tremendous amount of kindness in my life, just from people I don't know. Then your mind says, yeah, but they did it to work for money. That doesn't matter. Yeah, that doesn't matter. You work for money too. Yeah. The point is, without them doing what they did, we wouldn't have all of the things we rely on to stay alive and to be comfortable and to communicate with each other. Yeah. So it doesn't matter their reason. What matters is their effort. And so, when you think deeply about this, you really feel like, wow, everybody's been so kind to me. Yeah. And then you want to pay it forward. You want to give back to others. Yeah. So that starts with just being polite to strangers in society. It starts with just being polite, saying thank you when you go to a store. Yeah. When people are doing road work, yeah, and you're stopped because of it, open the window and thank them for doing what they're doing. Yeah, when the trash collectors come around, thank them. Yeah. Anybody who you see, who you're benefiting from, which is lots of people, just thank them. And then think of paying it forward. Yeah. So when somebody helps you, yeah, you could write a letter to their boss and praise them. Or you know how sometimes when you have to call some kind of line to get information and you finally get to speak to a human being, and then they ask you if you want to, if you want to take a survey, take the survey and praise the person who helped you. Yeah, there are all sorts of things that we can do to repay the kindness of strangers. Okay, then you're going to say, yeah, okay, you talked me into it about strangers. But what about the people I don't like? The people who harm me, who cheat me, who make policies that I don't like? Yeah. What about that guy with the orange hair and orange skin that upsets the world's economy and makes tariffs and drops bombs on ships? Yeah. What about all those people? Yeah. Well, when you really think about the people who have harmed you And what you had to do to recover from the harm? Think about it this way. When you recover from the harm, you had to grow in some way. You had to learn to put down some problem, to not hang on and want revenge. Yeah, because as long as you're wanting revenge, you're in pain. The other person isn't. So to recover from harm, we have to just say, yeah, this is a result of my own negative karma. I'm not going to blame that person. And then you have to really work on yourself and let go of those expectations you had of people acting differently than they acted. Yeah. But that growth that you had was due to those people who harmed you. And we would not have grown inside of ourselves and developed new resources, let go of unrealistic expectations, and done all those things if it hadn't been for people harming us. So we have to thank the people who harmed us because they were also kind in instigating in us this ability to grow and to deal with misfortune. Okay, does that make some sense to you? I hope so, because it's really, I find in my life, yeah, that's what has helped me so much. Yeah. To thank the people who have betrayed my trust, for example, because I had unrealistic expectations of how they would act. And I never communicated that to them. And I expected them to be perfect. Okay. If somebody said to you, I expect you to be perfect, which means that you always do what they want you to do, what would you say? Somebody says, I expect you to be perfect and always do what I want you to do. What would you say? Yeah.
I need a robot.
I need a robot. Yeah. Yeah, maybe the robot, but robots don't even do what you want to do. Yeah. When you think about it, yeah, if somebody said that to me, I'd say, forget it. Forget it. I cannot do that. Yeah, I cannot do that. If you're looking for somebody to be perfect, look elsewhere. I cannot fulfill that. Yeah? But why do we expect other people to? Why do we expect other people to always do what we want them to do if we would say no if they expected us to always do what they wanted us to do? You know, that's kind of unfair, isn't it, from our side? Okay. So really let those expectations go. Because, yeah, one time many years ago, I went through some hardships and I was talking to one of my Dharma friends, you know, telling him, oh, these people did this and they did that and it was supposed to go this way and turn out really nice and it didn't, totally didn't, and I'm so unhappy about it. And I was really wanting my friend to say, oh, that's really, well, how those people treated you was not so nice. What did my friend say? He said, this is samsara. What do you expect? That shut me up. Yeah, because he was right. Yeah, this is cyclic existence. What am I expecting? Yeah, it's me and my faulty expectations that's causing the problem, not the other people. Yeah. So it makes sense when we're all sitting here together, being nice to each other. Try and remember it when you feel like somebody's harming you. Yeah. Okay. And so when you think about the kindness of others, then the other thing to meditate on is to return that kindness. Be compassionate, be kind to other people. Yeah. As one of my friends once said, create fewer problems than you cause. Yeah. Help the world have fewer problems than when we were born. Okay. So regarding that orange guy, he is the focus of my compassion meditation. Yeah. Because I have to have compassion for the guy. When I think of, you know, how he's acting and how he feels inside, I think he's actually somebody who's quite afraid. Yeah, because only somebody who's afraid, who's insecure, requires all this praise. Only someone who lacks self-confidence desires to have so much power and exploit other people. So when I think, you know, how must he feel about himself when he's alone? You know, he's an incredibly angry person. Yeah, incredibly angry. When people, you know, when we have anger, we are miserable. Nobody's happy when they're angry. So isn't somebody who's suffering like that, shouldn't they be the object of my compassion rather than the object of my hatred? Yeah. So I have to thank him as much as I disagree with all of his policies and as much as I don't believe what he says. You know, he's also chronically lying. Again, why? You know, something is wrong inside if you always lie to make yourself look innocent, make yourself look good. So that person has to be the object of compassion. Mm-hmm. Okay? So compassion protects my mind from the non-virtue of hatred and anger. Yeah? And it makes me, you know, open my heart instead of holding a grudge. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was the first question. How to be joyful when you practice? We're so fortunate to have a precious human life, to have our senses intact, to live in a country that's peaceful. You don't have that orange guy as your president. Yeah, you should rejoice, be happy. Yeah. You know, there's so many Dharma teachers here. You can get so many teachings from different teachers and different Buddhist traditions. You have Dharma friends to practice with, to discuss the Dharma with. You have books in your own language. You speak English, many of you speak Chinese. My goodness. You should be joyful up to the ceiling and beyond because you have such good conditions. Yeah. Dharma is not like Oh, I have to do this. Yeah. It shouldn't be something that, oh, I have to do, 'cause, but I don't want to. You know, Dharma is creating the causes for happiness in the future for ourselves, and is creating the happiness in the world now. So we should feel joyful at having the opportunity to create happiness. Yeah. Then you say, yeah, but yeah, I'm not Mother Teresa. I'm not the Dalai Lama. You know, I can't create happiness. You don't have to be Mother Teresa or the Dalai Lama. Yeah, you just have to be you and be kind and compassionate to the people that you encounter as you move around from day to day and do things. Yeah, be kind to your bosses. Yeah, I know you all hate your bosses. Singaporeans always complain to me, oh, what do I do, my boss? Be kind. Have some compassion for your boss. Would you want to be your own boss? Would you want to be a boss to employees like you? Yeah, who always go to the boss and say, oh, and complain. Yeah. Be nice to your boys, boss. Be nice to your colleagues. Yeah. Be nice to your neighbors. Yeah. And the guy who cuts you off on the highway, be kind to him too. You want to cut me off? Go ahead. I will get there one car length later. Go ahead. You want to go in? Go ahead. It's fine. Yeah. Okay, so that's how to be joyful. Yeah. So Dharma practice isn't just something we do when we meditate. Yeah. It's also how we live, how we treat people. Yeah. It's good to have a meditation practice. Yes, I know you have no time. Yeah, your life is so busy. You have so many things to do. You have to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You always have time for those. But some time to sit and be quiet for 5 minutes, no time. You know, that, and you say, my appointment book is full. You know what you do? You write in an appointment with the Buddha. You have an appointment with the Buddha every day for at least 15 minutes, either to sit quietly, or to read a Dharma book, or to just contemplate, you know, what you know. Yeah, 15 minutes. You text for hours every day. Text less. You will have more time. True or not true? Well, no, texting just takes a few seconds, but the number of texts you send every day, the time mounts up. Yeah. Text less, email less, gossip less. You'll have more time and more internal peace. Okay. Sustaining our motivation in difficult times. Complain louder. Feel sorry for yourself longer. Sit and go, oh, the times are so difficult. My business has gone down. My spouse doesn't love me. My kids are rebellious. Oh, poor me, poor me, poor me. Yeah, take your blankie and go suck your thumb. Huh? Another alternative thing to do in difficult times is not do what we usually do. Yeah, go out and help people. I have a friend who lives in Ukraine. Yeah, in Dnipro, Ukraine. And when the war broke out, when Russia invaded, we said, please come to the Abbey. Please come and stay with us. Yeah, it's too dangerous there. She's a Dharma practitioner. I said, please come. No. Yeah, the situation got worse. Please come. We have another friend in Germany who was begging her, please come to Germany. Yeah, we want you safe. No. Yeah. She says that people in her country need help. And she wants to stay and help. So she continues to work at her job, even though a Russian missile damaged her workplace. Even though every night she hears the sounds of missiles and bombs exploding. But she practices kindness. Yeah. And she helps her neighbors. She feeds the stray animals. And she's totally amazing. I wonder how I could deal with the situation she's in. But she keeps up her meditation practice. She reads Dharma books. They made an online Dharma study group. She participates in that. So if she can do that, she's just an ordinary person like us, you know, then we can survive difficult times. Yeah. Do some reading about what happened in China during the Cultural Revolution. If you think you have difficulties, my goodness, what happened during the Cultural Revolution was awful. Yeah. In their struggle sessions, they required children to slander their parents and call their parents bourgeois. They required students to slander their teachers and also say that they're bourgeois. It was awful, totally awful. People who wanted to study in the university were said to be bourgeois. They were sent out to work in the rural areas and the fields. Yeah. Just do some reading about that, or do some reading by Solzhenitsyn. He's a Russian author who wrote during the Stalinist times and talked about what people went through during Stalin. You know, read those kind of accounts and then compare that to the difficult times that you face. Yeah, and how those people somehow survived. It's amazing. Some people didn't, but many people did. And it's because they had strong minds and they just said, I'm not going to let this, what's happening in society, destroy me. Yeah, it doesn't matter if I'm poor, doesn't matter if the people I love get incarcerated. I am going to keep my kindness. I'm going to keep my own integrity. Is it important to aspire for rebirth in the Pure Land? If you want to be born there, it's important to aspire to be born there. Yeah. If you want to be born in the hell realm, just forget about Dharma and do your usual thing. Yeah. It's a good aspiration to have. Yeah. To be born in the Pure Land. But it's not just aspiring to be born in the Pure Land. And it's not just reciting Namo Amitabha. It's generating love and compassion for other beings. It's generating bodhicitta, the aspiration to attain awakening, so you can be of the greatest benefit to all living beings. Yeah. It requires keeping good ethical conduct. Yeah. But if you do those things and you dedicate to be reborn in Amitabha's Pure Land or the Medicine Buddha's Pure Land or one of the Akshobhya's Pure Land, yeah, then do that and make the aspiration. Yeah. But when you're born in Amitabha's Pure Land, there's nine grades of lotuses. Everybody's born in a closed lotus. Okay. So if you want to have a nice long rest and sleep, yeah, in a lotus that doesn't open for a long time, then don't generate bodhicitta. Yeah. If you want to be born in a lotus that will open quickly so that you can hear teachings from Amitabha, yeah, so that you can hear teachings from Nagarjuna, the great Buddhist sage who was born in the Pure Land, then, do what I just said about kindness and ethics and so on. Yeah. We want to be born in a lotus that opens quickly, yeah, because we are busy people and we want to get enlightened as soon as possible so we can cross it off of our list and then go on a nice holiday. No, it's so that we could benefit more living beings. Okay. How to maintain mindfulness. Be aware of what your body is doing and checking if you're living according to your ethical concerns physically. Yeah. Be aware of your speech and what are you saying and why are you saying it? How often do we consider the result of our speech and the result of our physical actions? Yeah, we have to stop and think about what the result is going to be on other people and also on ourselves. Yeah, I do work with people in prison. And that's one of the big things that got them into prison is they had an impulse in the mind and they just acted it out. Yeah. And being impulsive, it's going to lead us into a lot of trouble. Yeah. When an idea comes, instead of acting immediately, stop, pause. What are the results of this going to be on other people and on myself? Okay. And then be aware of your motivation. Yeah. And try at the beginning of the day to generate a good motivation. Yeah. To be kind, to keep good ethical conduct. Yeah. to be grateful to other people. And then throughout the day, remember your motivation. That helps your mindfulness. Okay, and the last one. What does it mean to meditate on sutra? I'm not sure I totally understand the question, but I'll give it a go. I'm thinking that the question is actually, how do we meditate on the teachings? Yeah, whether they're written in a sutra, whether they're spoken when we go for oral teachings, whether it's a commentary. Yeah. So what's very helpful to meditate on the teachings is just to write down the major points, yeah, in what you read or what you heard. Just write down the major points and then sit and contemplate them. Yeah. What, you know, contemplate the first point. What does that really mean? Yeah. What does that mean? And how does it pertain to my life? And then you go to the next point. You know, what's the meaning of that point? And how does that relate to my life? Okay. So today, you know, we talked. Well, I gave you a very brief meditation on the kindness of others. Yeah. Afterwards, write down the major points, and then just sit and reflect on them and think, you know, of the kindness of people you know. Yeah, think of the kindness of strangers, you know, and then spend some time on thinking of the kindness of the people who have created difficulties for you. Yeah, so make it a very personal meditation. This will really, really help you. Okay, so questions, comments?
I'll be in the middle to ask my first question.
Okay.
I'm grateful. I remember started today's session with 5 precepts. And many a time, all the I refrain or abstain from doing such and such comes from the point of I'm sick about it. I'm giving up the beautiful wines that I used to have. Oh, I'm giving up the delicious lobster that I used to enjoy. You know, how does one shift from point of giving up, sacrificing, to happily, joyfully abstaining?
I think when you realize that the happiness you used to have from those things isn't real happiness, it doesn't last very long. How many lobsters have you eaten? Yeah. You know, and if eating lobster made you happy, you would be joyful ever since you ate the first one. It doesn't bring lasting happiness, does it? Yeah. And if you think of being the lobster in this deal, yeah, would you want to be the lobster dropped into boiling water for somebody's meal? Yeah, when you think like that and you realize, I've eaten so many lobsters before, so what? Then it's not a big deal to not eat another one. And the same with wine, you know. Oh, how much liquor have you drunk your whole life? You're no wonder. You know, you live in a tall building. Imagine the whole building filled with wine, you know. And, you know, we've drunk so much liquor. And has it made you happy? Okay. So when you think like that, it's like, well, yeah, I felt good for a few minutes, and then? Yeah, so you see, it's not real happiness. Yeah, so, and then when you think, like, especially with the lobster, oh, this lobster's going to be really happy that I'm not eating him, then, you know, you feel good about that. People often ask, the term renunciation, what are you have to give up everything you like. The renunciation isn't about the things you like. It's not renouncing happiness. It's renouncing misery. Because when we act with ignorance, anger, and attachment, we're creating the causes, plural, for our own misery. So that's what we're renouncing. Okay. I mean, I think everybody here is, you're tired of getting sick. You're tired of, getting old. Oh my God, how old? You look in the mirror and it's like, who's this person? And, this whole cycle of birth is aging, sickness, and death. I mean, we've done it millions of times and still we're going round and round. And so that's what we're renouncing, I mean, why did the Buddha teach? You think that the Buddha taught so that you could be miserable? Yeah. Oh, the Buddha said, I can't drink wine. I can't drink lobster. Buddha, you're making me so miserable. I thought you were supposed to bring joy. Well, he is. He's telling us how to create the causes of happiness. Yeah. And the causes of happiness are not our self-centered mind. Yeah. Okay. So you really see here how what our ordinary way of thinking and what the Buddha taught go in opposite directions. Yeah.
So my question is about choice. So for instance, earlier, it's choice between a good thing and a good thing, right? So for instance, one path is a choice of simplification. As we simplify our life, not just materially, but even in terms of saying no to good projects, not good projects for the career, but good volunteering projects, for the Dharma, things like that. So generally just simplifying life so that we have more time maybe for inward contemplation, reflection, right? Generally just less things to worry about. Or maybe the other choice is saying yes to everything. You want to do this translation? Yes. You want to be volunteer? Yes. You want to help with cleaning the temple? Yes. That kind of thing. I'm just giving a caring caricature of both extremes, right? So that's one choice. I'm thinking, how do we think about it? And also the example you gave about your friend who was in Ukraine, who is in Ukraine, right? Even for me, I think that's a good choice and a good choice, right? She stayed behind. Yes, there's some sacrifice, but she helps her neighbors. She's that solid. Solidarity for her people. She goes to another country, yes. She has, maybe she can extend her precious human life there. And she can also contribute to the new community there. So I guess in life there's no clear cut. So I'm wondering, how do we think about choice, right? Between a good thing and also a good thing. Thank you.
I think, first of all, you have to check if the things that you think are good are actually good. That's one thing. And the second one is, if you say yes to everything, can you do everything? No. So then you're going to leave a lot of other people expecting you to help. And at the end of the, when the thing is needs to be done, they're going to be left high and dry. So you might say, well, that's a good thing for me. I volunteered, I look good, and then I slept through the whole thing. Yeah, good for me. No. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. See if your choices are really good in the long term, See if they could present any challenge to your ethical conduct. Because you might be very excited. Oh, I got this wonderful job. I have a corner office. I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm so happy. Should I accept it? Yes. And then have you really thought of what that job entails? Yeah, and maybe your boss is, going to ask you to lie or do something deceptive or think that, well, you got a corner office, you should work 16 hours a day. Yeah, so, just think it through a bit.
You know, when you make aspiration to be born in the pure land, which pure land should be, should be a choice? Because you have like the Western paradigm, the Abhidharma. Then you have the medicine Buddha. You also have the Tushita heaven. So, I mean, like myself, I really don't know which one.
Do you think I know?
But should there be any guiding principle?
That, go online and ask a travel agent. They'll tell you. it just depends. You could make it general, a pure land. Yeah. Or there may be one pure land that just kind of you feel more drawn towards it than the other ones. You could also aspire to be born with a precious human life like you have now. I often, when I'm called to help somebody die, I tell them, pray to be born in the pure land or pray for a precious human life. So you cover all bases. Yeah.
You can do both.
Yeah. No, well, not in the same lifetime.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, the difference between compassion and bodhicitta. Compassion is a cause for bodhicitta. Okay? So compassion is the wish for living beings to be free of all the misery of samsara and its causes. Okay? Then based on that wish that they be free from that, then you think, okay, am I just going to sit there and wish for it? Or am I going to try and do something to, lead them to happiness and its causes? You go, well, I better do something, yeah? You can't be like you're standing at the ocean and somebody's drowning out there. And, oh, that person's drowning. It's terrible. It's terrible. You jump in and go rescue them. No, we have to do something, okay? And so then when you look around, who is able to benefit sentient beings the most? A Buddha, because a Buddha has the full knowledge and wisdom, the full compassion, the skillful means. The Buddha has all the ability to be of the greatest benefit to others. So if I really want to benefit others and lead them out of samsara, and all of the sufferings in samsara, then I aspire to become a Buddha for the benefit of all these living beings. That's bodhicitta. Okay, good question. Okay, now somebody's going to raise their hands and, but it's too hard. Yeah. Why do I have to benefit all sentient beings? Yeah, it's too hard. And it takes too long to become a Buddha. Yeah. Can't I just get myself out of samsara and call it quits? Well, you can. That's your choice. Okay, yeah, I'm going into the bliss of liberation. Good luck, everybody else. I hope you can find your way out, too. How would you feel about that? If you were in the Titanic and the ship is going down, and one person had the, could, if they really tried, do something to rescue others, But they were just in a hurry to get themselves off of the Titanic and said, oh, yeah, fine, good. You guys have a lot of jewels. You have a comfortable room. Yeah, just lie down, relax, wait till the boat sinks and you die. Yeah, what do you think of that? Would you say that to somebody? No. Okay. So it doesn't matter how hard it is to become a Buddha or how long it takes. It's something definitely worthwhile to do. Yeah, because it can have a real far-reaching effect. And also, when you think about it, what would have happened if the Buddha had that attitude of, okay, I'm liberated, everybody, bye. Where would we be now if Shakyamuni had not become a Buddha, but had just been satisfied with getting himself out of samsara? Yeah, we wouldn't have the teachings. We wouldn't have him as a guide. We'd be really lost, wouldn't we? Yeah. So if the Buddha, you know, could do this and attain Buddhahood, so can we. Because we, you know, Buddha started off as a sentient being just like us. Yeah. In fact, we probably used to, you know, hang out with the Buddha, go out to dinner, play mahjong. But this was before he became a Buddha. Yeah. We hung out. And now he's a Buddha. The continuum of that mind stream became a Buddha. And we're still in samsara. Why? What's the difference? Yeah. Because we used to play mahjong together, you know? Well, the difference is that person practiced the Dharma and we gave up mahjong. Okay. So, you know, I'm just using mahjong as an example, you know, but if you kind of steer your mind and take a different direction in life, then, you know, you can set your direction to be Buddhahood and do wonderful things for others.
After Shakyamuni Buddha got enlightened, I think he did say it was hard, right? And it was hard to enlighten people until Brahma came and asked him to help to share with those little dust in the eye. So that story actually is an imprint in my mind, because even for fully enlightened, you know, Anattara Samyak Sambodhi Buddha, even he said it's very hard to enlighten everyone.
That's the story. I wonder if he really thought that. Yeah. Because, you know, the story's very good, because it makes us kind of go, oh, all these important gods invited the Buddha to remain, and even he had doubts. So, yeah, maybe it's okay for me and all. But I wonder, he practiced for three countless great eons. I think he must have had the faith that he could do something after he attained Buddhahood, for him to practice that long. Okay. But, okay, if we look at the story just on face value, it's a useful story, because you see, oh, the Buddha had doubts and he overcame them. So when I have doubts, I can also overcome my doubts. Instead of saying, oh, I have doubts, I'm bad, I shouldn't have doubts, I should just believe. But you don't, you have doubts. Yeah. Actually, a certain kind of doubt makes us more interested in learning, because we want to resolve our doubt. We have questions and we want to find the answers. So it can also be a boost in learning.
Okay. So, Venerable, do you see the bodhicitta is a higher level than compassion?
Yeah, compassion is the cause for bodhicitta.
Venerable, my question is, recently a Dharma teacher said to me that, because I'm in my mid-40s now, and she said to me, hey, you should try to stop doing and more being. And so that left me scratching my head. Being what? She said, being happy, being joyful to prepare for the later years in my life. So I have been contemplating what she said to start to be more being rather than doing. So for the early part of my life, been chasing up a build a career, chasing this, chasing that. And so my teacher said, start being. So my question, what does it mean? Like, what do you mean being present? I understand that, but what else?
Yeah, we run around doing a lot. And people in Singapore have so much anxiety. Running around, this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. What happens if I don't do this? I must do that. I should have done that. My goodness. Makes me exhausted. So I think that's what she's talking about. You know, all that doing that keeps you chasing this, chasing that, and for what purpose, yeah? And being, the way I interpret it, is developing your own good qualities, yeah? Developing your understanding of the Buddha's teachings, thinking about life, you know? And thinking about really what causes happiness. And if you're thinking about the later part of your life, yeah? What kind of older person do you want to be? Yeah? Do you want to be one that has a huge house, you know, and lots of children and lots of friends? And you're sick and old and, yeah, is all that going to make you happy? You might have a lot of money in the bank account, but how's that going to help you when you're old and lonely and, you know? Whereas if you have a happy mind, yeah, if you're able to really develop, you know, love and compassion and wisdom, yeah, and joyous effort and concentration and generosity and ethical conduct, you know, all those kind of practices, if you develop them starting when you're younger, then, you know, when you're older, you can be peaceful. Yeah? Because you meet some people who are old, who are bitter. You ever met a bitter? Yeah. And bitter old people, it's so tragic. They live their whole life and they feel like life didn't treat me right. Yeah? And yet, who are you going to complain to? And then you meet older people who are quite relaxed and happy. And when I think about, you know, aging, I want to be the kind of old person that has a sense of humor, that can laugh at myself, you know, when I'm, you know, I have to wear a diaper. you know, I mean, when you're old, all sorts of things happen that change your feeling of being in charge and dignified and all. And I want to be somebody who can just be relaxed, laugh at things, and people who have to take care of me to be kind to them, yeah, and maybe even inspire them through what I've learned from living.
Hi, Venerable. My question is about choices. So, because I'm going to make a choice, I've actually already made a choice. It brings peace to me, but it's creating a bit of unrest and tension, and to the other party, it's not peaceful for him. So I don't feel guilty about it because I understand it's his attachment to me. That's why it's making him feeling that what he's feeling. But I cannot possibly just ignore his situation. So it makes me sometimes think with whether my choice is it the correct choice or not.
Yeah, lots of times we choose to do things that other people don't like, and it may even hurt their feelings and make them very sad. So a few things here. One is we have to check our motivation. And if we look and, you know, this is really a good decision, follow, you know, staying with that person, that's not going to work out in the long term. It's not going to be good for me, for them. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, you break up. I'm assuming that's what happened. Yeah. And
I'm talking about my boss.
Your boss. Oh. Not your boyfriend. Oh. Okay. You broke up with your boss.
Because we have been working together for 10 years. Uh-huh. So I'm going to resign. So it's creating a little bit of... He's very upset.
It's the same like breaking up with a boyfriend. It's the same thing. Yeah. Okay. But the point is, okay, you check your motivation. And it's good, yeah. You have no intention to hurt somebody or cause him inconvenience. Can you control what he feels? Can you control his reaction?
No way.
Yeah, then don't worry about it, okay? What each person feels, that is their responsibility. So if somebody says something and I am hurt by it, my pain is my responsibility. It's not the others. If the other person intentionally wanted to hurt my feelings, their intention to do that is their problem. We're all responsible for our actions, but we're not responsible for the other person's response because we cannot control it. Yeah? So you can often, you know, yeah, that's the way things are, yeah? And it's also the way we should think when our feelings are hurt. Don't blame the other person. Oh, you fired me. You broke up with me. You did this. No, why do I feel angry? My anger is my responsibility. Nobody made me angry. In English, we always say, you made me angry. That's not true. The other person didn't make us angry. We have the seed of anger inside. Yeah. We have expectations, which are a setup for disappointment, okay? So if I'm angry, that's my responsibility. There's no situation that forces me to be upset. Yeah, I get upset because of the seed of anger, because I'm not getting what I want. Yeah, welcome to samsara. Yeah. I mean, when you have children, how many of you have kids? Yeah. Yeah, you have a boy. Do you have a kid? Oh. that's their daughter. You can't see the resemblance. So, yeah, where was I? So, when you have kids, okay, what do you often find your children saying to your kids? You know, in life, you can't get everything you want. Yeah? Other people have feelings. They may get the things you want. That's okay. Rejoice that they're happy. Yeah? So we have to follow our own advice. Mm-hmm. Let's just pause for a minute and rejoice at what we did together today. Yeah, that as individuals and as a group, we talked about some meaningful things in our life. And we're coming out of it with more interest and eagerness in developing a kind heart. We're coming out of it with more things to think about, with more knowledge. And so we created a lot of merit. And let's rejoice at the merit that we created. And imagine sending it out in the form of light rays, touching all the living beings everywhere and bringing them peace. And so rejoice at what we did individually and rejoice that we were part of a group. And the group had a certain motivation, yeah, to do something good. And as together as a group, that's what we did. So there's the merit of the group as well as the merit of all the individuals. And let's send that out, yeah, with our aspirations and our dedications, that it ripen in the well-being of each and every living being.